We've been within our organization spending a lot of time around grow finish because there seems to be a piece of buy-in to biosecurity that's a little different on the grow finish side of the business, I would say, versus the sow side of the business. And so, you know, often you're dealing with a contract grower that might not necessarily have all of the same information that you do, and has different priorities and different responsibilities that they need to also be juggling while they're trying to manage this part of the business. So I think that is a big thing with biosecurity is a lot of the execution relies on buy-in. And if you haven't spent that time to get that buy-in from them, it can be really difficult.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high quality, safe, and sustainable way. Cargill Animal Nutrition and Health Pork Solutions delivers trusted, data-driven nutrition and business support, helping you build more profitable, confident pork systems. Broiler Savvy, the pioneering AI-powered solution for broiler gut functionality and metabolic efficiency insights. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. BinCentury, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world.
Good day. My name is Phil Hoard. I'm the host of today's podcast. Today, we have Dr. Brigitte Davenport joining us. Dr. Davenport is the director of Sows Indiana for Country View Family Farms. Thanks for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, a little bit about Dr. Davenport. She earned her doctorate of veterinary medicine from the University of Illinois in 2016 and joined Country View Family Farms as a field veterinarian immediately after graduation. She spent 4 years working in Pennsylvania before transitioning into sow production management, where she led people, production, and herd health. She later served as a senior veterinarian for the Indiana region, and in 2023 became the director of Sows for Indiana. Throughout her career, she has completed extensive leadership development, including the Executive Veterinary Program at the University of Illinois, and has served on advisory boards across academia and the pharmaceutical industry. Outside of work, she moonlights as a small animal emergency veterinarian, which is very cool, and enjoys world travel with three of the world wonders still to go. She also runs 5Ks and values time with her family at their home in Indiana. So thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm very interested to hear about the emergency animal veterinarian there. That's cool.
Yeah, it keeps me on my toes and it's a bit of a different type of medicine. But I actually think by practicing that type of medicine, it's actually made me a better veterinarian for the swine and able to connect with people much better. So it's been a good experience.
So when we were talking about what to talk about today, it's really fun for me to get to talk with someone that's in production and, you know, you're living the realities of the world today, you know, blending that knowledge and learning that you've had throughout your time, you know, and then putting that into practice today. And so what better to talk about than the world of disease and specifically biosecurity, I think would be a cool thing for us to talk about today. So let's dive right into it, I guess. You know, what's on your mind as it regards to biosecurity?
Yeah, so I think biosecurity is always a good topic to cover, whether you're looking at sows or even grow finish specifically. We've been within our organization spending a lot of time around grow finish because there seems to be a piece of buy-in to biosecurity that's a little different on the grow finish side of the business, I would say, versus the sow side of the business. And so, you know, often you're dealing with a contract grower that might not necessarily have all of the same information that you do, and has different priorities and different responsibilities that they need to also be juggling while they're trying to manage this part of the business. So I think that is a big thing with biosecurity is a lot of the execution relies on buy-in. And if you haven't spent that time to get that buy-in from them, it can be really difficult.
Looking to improve the performance of your finisher pigs this summer? Digesterone Finish offers a phytogenic solution that boosts feed digestibility, enhances growth performance, and reduces mortality and morbidity. Trials show that Digesterone Finish can help you achieve a faster, heavier finish and better profitability. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish.
I see that a lot, especially in our business as well. I use the analogy a lot of, you know, a lot of times there's this mountain and we've climbed the mountain and we're on the other side of the mountain, but we've left everyone else on the other side of the mountain because either we're working on how to get there, right? And making the plan and kind of, but then that, you know, I heard you say it, right? That communication and usually that then creates the buy-in. And so talk about that. You know, how does that look, or how have you guys been proactively working on how to improve that buy-in? I guess, what steps have you taken?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I would say we are probably still actively working on what exactly does it take to get that buy-in. But I think there's a couple of things that we've really focused on, is because when you talk about health, viruses, bacteria, it's not a tangible thing that they can see, feel, and touch like they can in the sense of like animal welfare or I need to treat this sick animal. They can visibly see that. So when you're talking about, you know, shed and spread, that gets really difficult because it's not tangible for them to touch. So really being armed with information that they can actually relate to and understand has been a big piece of it, because most people, if they understand something, they're willing to go that mile and go that extra step. We've even done things with like the glow powder where we put it in and then show them like, okay, look at everywhere you've went that you didn't even realize you went. So, you know, different things like that have certainly helped. But I think just being more active and engaged in the conversation and a little less of the here, just go do this. Like, you know, you need to put different boots on when you go into the barn. Well, okay, this is why you need to do that. You know, and certainly you see growers who maybe experience things like PED or, you know, even the transfer of like bacterial diseases from rendering trucks. They seem to get it much faster. And you see after that experience, you see a really big spike in compliance with how they manage their site.
Yeah, you mentioned PED, PED being at a 10-year kind of recorded high here recently, according to the ISU database there. You know, is there anything specific around that's been causing you guys to spend more time in this area?
Yeah. So actually for us, it's been both PED. This year was a pretty rough year. We broke 4 sow units with it. And then we broke 2 multiplication sites with Delta. So we lost, you know, 8 weeks worth of gilts by doing that. So that's actually really what spurred on this discussion, because, you know, sometimes we get a little dull to PRRS, especially with the fact that it can be aerosolized and transmitted that way and all of that. But PED seems to be one that it's a lot easier to track down. Okay, well, a feed truck went to a PED positive site and then went to a negative site. And look, 3 days later, you have a positive site. So certainly that piece has definitely spurred more discussion. And it's also spurred the discussion of like, okay, so what is practical to implement on these sites? So these are contract sites. So do we design them to be more biosecure by requiring benches or requiring showers that aren't just straight walk through right into the barn? And maybe by design alone, you eliminate some of those things, or even looking at like what shows up. So a live haul vehicle shows up but has no side door. So the driver either has to walk into the barn to be able to get into his trailer or climb in and do some, you know, fancy maneuvering at the end of the chute. So we probably need to be more in tune with certain sites only having trailers show up with side doors.
Yeah.
And I also think just from like a buying perspective, like if an organization thinks about those things, I think the grower appreciates that because it's something that you're doing for them. You're setting them up for success. Whereas on the back half, if you're like, well, you broke the site and you're doing all these things that we don't really love, it's like, well, you didn't set me up for success.
Yeah, that's you know, a lot of times we can be in production. There's a lot of finger pointing that happens towards, okay, this was the source, or that was the source. And ultimately, the goal here is to try to reduce the barriers to executing the proper protocols or the suggested protocols. Obviously, in a perfect world, everything could be done exactly to protocol or to design. But as you indicate, you know, transport can be a big one. Even design of the barn, you know, we're in the industry, we're dealing with sites that were built far before PED was even thought of, right? So, or at least in production, and one of our major issues today as an industry, and even design choices there can be a challenge. But there are things to do, Danish changes, things like that, that can be significantly helpful even in the light of those barriers.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. You know, transport biosecurity, you know, what things do you think we can do to help that without having to make such large capital investment changes, I guess? What are your thoughts on that?
Certainly, some of it will always be the investment of washes, bio dries, even the side doors on a trailer. You're probably looking at about $7,000 if you're going to retrofit a trailer as it exists today, maybe even more if you have to move the internal ramp that might already be in place. So it's not to say that you can do some of these things without that investment, but certainly there are things within a system that we let slip by without even realizing are probably big opportunities for us. So I think some of that is just the flow of traffic and how that goes in general. So what does your fleet look like? What can you share? Who shares what? Is there a way, you know, the most basic segregation, right, is, you know, typically gilts, coals, weans, feeders, and markets. So, you know, just even starting at that base level, I think is really, really important. And we often see like, well, this trailer is out of commission. It needed work. So we pulled the market trailer in, and it's like, ooh, we need a better plan than that. Because that will definitely end up at some point. If it hasn't burned you today, it will burn you at some point. So I think doing simple things like that, like really understanding your fleet, understanding what exactly is that number that you need to be biosecure, but also efficient, because it doesn't always make sense to have, you know, 14 trailers in a fleet. Maybe you can do it with 12, but you can't do it with 12 if two of them are always in the maintenance shop. So I think understanding just what that looks like is really important. And then I would also say understanding what the limitations are and the statuses of your site when your transport vehicles show up to them. So I think we often assume something is a health status, and then it shows up there and 2 weeks later you realize, oh, that was not the health status of that site. So I think there's organizational things like that that can just be small investments of time and things that you're already doing within the organization, but can really make a big improvement. And definitely the scheduling is a huge piece of that. We've gone to the vets approving our transport schedule. So every Friday afternoon, the vets get it. We look through it, we read through it, we say, yes, this makes a lot of sense to us. And then, you know, we put limitations on backhauling for multiplication, because we're trying to, you know, protect that, protect the sows. And then there are, you know, some a little more leeway when it comes down to just basic commercial flows. But I think those things are things that sometimes just get overlooked, or maybe a decision is made from a logistics coordinator because it's the best for the business. But then there are negative consequences that get missed because they're thinking with one mindset, and then you have the vet who's thinking with another mindset, but that's maybe not the best from a logistics perspective or an efficiency perspective. So really having those two individuals communicating so that you can actually make progress forward.
Yeah, that's logistics is obviously a challenge as it is without disease. And then when we add the barrier of disease, it's just a whole nother, you know, we call, we have this saying, is like a whole nother animal, right? It's like a whole different thing that, you know, adds that layer of complexity. But to your point, that usually can mean the potential of spreading disease or not, you know, especially if you're dealing with sites of different statuses. Internally, do you have a designation of sites, like a coloring system or a numbering system?
Yes. So we have a lettering system, which in and itself can get very confusing, but basically we have an A to C system. So C is usually your PRRS status farms. And then we designate them, you know, PD, Delta as another designation. So yeah, we absolutely categorize them that way. And then for us, what we do is we say wherever your last trailer touch was. So if you went from a C nursery to a C finisher, that C finisher is your last status. Because what we found was like our transportation would be hauling maybe super healthy pigs, but they were hauling them to a dirty finisher. But then they were treating that driver and trailer as if they hauled super healthy pigs. And so that was giving us some kind of spread potential there that we picked up on just by where the connections ended up with some disease breaks.
So their last final status, obviously the site that they were at the latest, is there always their current status, I guess, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And so another big thing that we did too that wasn't necessarily infrastructure or, you know, capital investment was really outlined, defined processes for how you wash a trailer, as well as how a driver gets into a trailer. So one thing that we found in the last couple of years was we had three washes and each wash had about three team members. So there was like 18 different ways to wash a trailer, depending on who was there. And then there were also 18 different expectations of what clean was versus what dirty was. So it definitely helped that we went through and did a big, what we call an initiative, and we did a truck wash initiative. And that was to set the standard and say, this is how we wash a truck. This is how we inspect the truck. This is who has the final say. So for like sow farms, the farm manager has the final say whether or not that trailer backs up, and we reject them if they're dirty. And then the driver gets in a certain way, gets out a certain way, and are, you know, having those a little more concrete, it leads for less variability from a driver being like, well, I like this, or I want this, or this works for me better. And then it's like, how do you even audit that or know what you're doing? So that was a big thing, that standardization of washing process, driver entry process, and reporting of failures of either of those.
Yeah, it's definitely a game changer when you give the individual who is using that trailer the power to say, oh yeah, this is good, or absolutely not, this is bad. I know in our business, I was talking with the lady that helps run our logistics, and she was telling me recently of some growers that were coming back and saying, hey, the trailer is dirty. And, you know, we think of, well, we're marketing, right? We're towards the end of the time. What's the risk? Well, the risk is there's still risk there, right? We still have the ability to break pigs with a disease, even if we don't confirm that that trailer was actually a disease carrying vehicle. We have to treat it as such because, you know, as well as I do, right? The plant is a unfortunate vector for many diseases. So that's really good. I think that's a very practical, you know, training and then alignment amongst the team to be able to say, you know what, this isn't Phil's version of treating the trailer as clean or Brigitte's version. This is the standard for all. That way we have a common standard and a common process.
Absolutely. I think it's also interesting that you bring up markets, because that was one thing about 4 years ago that we also changed, because we noticed we were having a lot of mid-marketing breaks where we'd have really healthy pigs get PRRS, and then they were, you know, dying at 300 pounds because they just couldn't handle that insult. Or they would be getting PED, and then because we have so many pigs on one site, we'd have wean pigs coming the next day, and then they'd get PED. So it was this vicious cycle. And we started treating our markets a little more like our wean to finish side of the business. So they got flushed out at our harvest facility, and then they actually got a second wash with another disinfectant at another location. And we did actually see that incidence of breaks, like in the middle of marketing, go down significantly. And, you know, gave the power to the load crew leaders to be able to reject trailers in the middle of the night and just say, we're not going to load this because it's X, Y, and Z. It's not been perfect, but we have been able to connect back, you know, a few more, or like they fill out a form that says this trailer was dirty, this is what we found. And it's been really insightful, especially on the marketing side of the business, because I think we sometimes get a little lax with that. You know, and if you have sites that go dark, that's great, but we certainly don't.
I think what we're talking about here is that when in leadership or in significant positions of authority or decision making, there's always good intentions. I can say I've never been in those discussions where there's not good intentions, right? There's always good intentions, but it's really about connecting each piece of the process and saying, okay, there's training involved, the communication involved, but then that feedback loop, you know, is coming back around, right? Like you just mentioned, giving boots on the ground loading crews the ability to feedback information, because them telling the wash crew that, hey, your trailer was dirty, probably isn't holding too many people accountable, right?
So exactly.
That information getting back around and being able to be visible, so that there is visibility to the entire process, including growing partners, which is, you know, they are a huge part of our, you know, each of our businesses. And but we both know that they can come with challenges if we don't appropriately communicate and give them the ability to communicate back as well. So such a good learning, and I feel like is very relevant, even though this is not super scientific at the end of the day. This is like realities of the industry, I think, is probably the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, because at the end of the day, it's got to be relevant and applicable to them. And they're not concerned if there was a relative p-value of anything.
No. Yeah, right. Yep, that's so true. Switching gears a little bit here, you know, with your experience and your background helping manage production and involved in leadership meetings, a hot topic in the world, let alone our industry, is around AI and the ability to use computing intelligence to help us operate our businesses. What are your thoughts on that, and what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, so AI, I think, is one of those really interesting tools, because I've attended a lot of just different speakers who talk about technologies and adding them into the barn, and how do you do that? How do you use it? And I think it's like anything. It comes with some good and it comes with some bad. And it's probably more about how you manage it and implement it. And again, get that buy-in from your team to really make it successful. I think one thing that I heard now probably a year ago that was the most interesting piece that I'd love to, you know, still explore more is, often we use AI and say, hey, I have an automated feed system. Now I need one less person in the barn as far as team members go, headcount goes. And so we're using automation to make up sometimes for our labor gap that we have in facilities. And I listened to a gentleman and he said that that's probably not the right approach, that as the more technology you add into your system, you might eventually need to add additional headcount to manage that technology and understand it and actually be able to apply it correctly. So I think that piece is interesting, especially as you start talking more truly about AI, where it's, you know, computer generated information telling you to go do something. So they have some of those lameness detectors, the fever detectors. I think those are interesting because it makes a good point of, okay, so maybe not all AI technology is going to really reduce your cost or remove labor. It actually, in some respects, might add to it. So then how do you pay for it? You know, and justify that return on investment. So I think that was, you know, super interesting because a lot of justification for technology adding is, right, I can remove a headcount. And so that might be something that we have to rethink or look at differently in the future.
That return comes from a different place, is I think what I hear you saying, right? That additional cost that's there is a real cost potentially, right? But ultimately that return, I mean, obviously the valuation of a dead sow can be quite substantial depending on that coal market and what that sow's value is. And especially when we don't have, as you mentioned earlier, if we're short gilts, as an example, right? That sow being in your farm still is a really important thing.
Yeah.
That valuation and the way that that potential return comes back is at least how I've heard others talk about it. And as I've thought about it, isn't always about how do I actually reduce costs. It's about how do I improve efficiency from the standpoint of, you know, again, a computer isn't going to, and this has been such an interesting topic as I've thought about it in our industry, because in other industries, it very well could replace a person. But when we're dealing with live animals and in the current layout of our farms, it's very different than a very much only computer oriented position as it was as a human doing the work and then just the computer doing the work versus this being a highly physical touch oriented, you know, using all senses and using information right in front of you. And so using that technology to help point out things that may have been more easily missed by a human or adding data points that may not have been there already, right? With some of the more modern feeding systems and being able to track intake or feed disappearance more specifically to an animal, there's just a lot there that I think, to your point, maybe doesn't always replace a human, but rather helps make them better, I think is a way to think about it too.
No, I totally agree, because really what you want that individual who's now taking care of them, you want them to do the critical thinking part, because a machine, no matter how good it is, there's going to be a piece of critical thinking. And like you mentioned, understanding the physical biology of that animal that machine isn't going to be able to replace. And I think hopefully when you're, and I think this is maybe the part that we sometimes struggle with, is really not only telling them like, okay, hey, you have this new AI tool that's going to do all of these things, but now we expect you to do the harder thinking. So your job gets easier because all of the low-hanging fruit is gone. But now the actual where you're thinking and you're making critical decisions that really impact this animal, you're going to do those. And so I think it really elevates the level of thinking that you see on, ideally, you hope it elevates that level of thinking and interaction that you see with those individuals, with, you know, each other, plus with that animal. And I think that's sometimes the piece that maybe gets a little lost. And you can see it. A great example is I was watching someone, they had an app that told them how many minutes they had been away from a sow. And so this one lady was looking and there was a sow in clear distress in front of her. And instead she went to another one because the app told her she had seen this one before she had seen the other one without sleeping that sow. And so like it was a good moment to be able to say, okay, but this sow needs the attention. And then there was another lady who used it exactly the way it was designed. She saw what she saw and she said, that's okay, I'm going to do this girl first. And then I'll go and manage that second sow. And so I think you know, that then falls on us to ensure that they understand these are the limits of it. And now we want you to think more.
Yeah, it's supporting the work and not replacing the thinking.
Yes,
and
that's right.
So probably an area that, and this is something we're actively talking about and thinking about as well, like how do we use, you know, so that's on farm. We've been talking about on farm. There's a lot of data that is generated that we have that is off farm that is very well positioned to be better interpreted or analyzed by AI. And that's exciting for me, I think, to look at those trends that maybe you and I, when we're working in Excel or we're pulling data from a database, aren't necessarily able to as quickly identify.
I think that's a great call out. And even like the summary of reports, when you can put in, especially like if you're doing, let's say, a lot of biosecurity investigations, to be able to put those reports in and you get this outlined summary, and then you can look at something and say, I need to investigate that piece more. It really helps you because we're all limited in time in a day. So you got to pick which is the one that I think is going to make the biggest impact for the system. And I think that, again, AI helps you hopefully open time to critically think more.
It's time for our famous three.
Sunhee is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us on sunhee.com for more information.
Well, these have, all been very cool things to discuss and to talk about today, and I appreciate your time. We have three questions that we like to ask our listeners or our people we're interviewing. And the first one is, what is your favorite swine-related book or resource?
So I really have two that are probably ones that I use the most often. So when it comes to diseases, I really like using Iowa State's disease portal, where they have all of the information of just how disease is transmitted. And I think it's laid out nicely enough that I've even printed it out when growers have been really, you know, growers or team members have been really asking lots of questions. I've printed it out and taken it to them, and they really like it because it doesn't get too in the weeds, but it gives you a good round picture of that. So that's one, especially earlier in my career, that I used quite frequently. And then the ability to use AASV, the American Association of Swine Veterinary, be able to use their portals of publications. I look at that a lot because there's a lot of production information in that one. There's a lot of different trials that people have done. So the journal is great, but plus just being able to peruse that website to find, you know, people ask you questions and I'm like, you know, I bet somebody else has either written some type of case report on this or a study. And that's been really useful throughout my career, even on the production side of the business.
No, I'm aware of both of those, and I would totally agree with you. That's awesome that you're able to find practical use of those things, even in what you're helping manage today. What is your favorite book or resource outside of the industry?
So as mentioned in my bio, probably the last 3 years, I've had really a great opportunity to just expand my leadership and development of that skill, which has been really helpful. So there really have actually been two books. One is called The Go-Giver, and it's a book more about how you treat individuals and how you get them to be successful within themselves. And I think that has been really helpful. It talks a lot about being a servant leader. And I think that's something that sometimes the world in general is missing. And so that's been a really big thing for me. And it's something that I've really tried to, I've made all my farm managers who report to me, they're listen to it or read it, even if it's just like the one page SparkNote version of it. But I've really enjoyed that book. And then another book that I also really enjoyed reading was What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And that was a really eye-opener for me in the sense of, okay, so I got this new role, which has a different set of responsibilities, even has a little more authority than what my other role did. So I got it, but what I did in my other role isn't going to work for this role. And it walked you through like how to recognize some self-habits that maybe you have that aren't so great that you need to really be successful in your new role and pursue other roles. You're going to have to change within yourself. And so that was actually a really good book for me once I had gotten this new role.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, a lot of times, even at the production level, the farm level, that we're promoting the top performers or the high performers, but that responsibility is very different when we start asking them to manage their peers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we could probably have a whole nother episode about this, actually.
I was just about to say, like, that's such a great call out, because we always get so disappointed when our top performers don't end up leading the team the way we think we should. And it's so interesting to look back. And if you analyze everything of that decision that you made and then what made them a top performer versus the qualities that you look at. And so, yeah, that could be definitely a whole topic within itself.
I think we just found our follow-up episode there, Brigitte, so that's good. And then lastly, there, in your opinion, what sets a successful professional apart from one that is not as successful?
So I think it's a couple of things. So one, I think the ability to be able to connect with people is really important, and connect with all different levels and types of individuals to really understand what their piece of the business is. I think that's really important. And I think often when I look at people who are super successful within my organization or other organizations, it's really their ability to connect and bring all of those people together. So I think that's one thing that really sets people apart. And then I think a second one is other individuals that I've also really appreciated and admired within the organization are ones that are able to recognize things and change with them and, you know, often change to the better and keep progressing, whether it's through personal development or understanding that, hey, the swine industry, though it's been the same for 30 years, it's also changed every year for 30 years and really been able to keep up and not get stuck in the status quo of this is how I've always done it, so this is how I'm going to keep doing it. I think those two traits, being able to bring people together and being okay with things changing and moving forward, I think those are really the individuals who end up setting themselves apart from others, even other outstanding individuals.
I love that. That's so true. You know, that it's really hard to make it forward in, you know, in today's world without being a connector and being a communicator and then also being someone that's willing to kind of understand the world is such advancing at such a rapid pace that, you know, we have to be rooted in our standards and who we are and all of that. But we also have to be willing to understand that if we don't change, look what happens when we don't, right? That's so true. So those are awesome things, and appreciate you sharing those. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Davenport, for being with us today. And for those of you listening, please share, like, and subscribe. And if you like these content, we'll be coming out with more conversations and great ones like we had today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.